Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, here we go on Cody and Gold. It is a Tuesday. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you a couple minutes early as we were discussing. We need to get our time back from the morning show.
This show does 4 hours.
Yeah.
Not 3 hours and 55 minutes. Four hours. If I'm here. Sometimes I'm gone or whatever, but, you know.
Look, if Fesco, Dusty, and Mac, if they want an extra, you know, 5 minutes, you know, June 20th, or something, by all means, they can have it. Not during football season, all right? It's got to be in the summertime or something like that. So I appreciate them for giving us our time.
It's Giving Tuesday, after all, you know?
What?
Isn't it Giving Tuesday?
Is it? I don't
That's
know.
That's usually, after Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
This seems like a gimmick.
To help charity? That seems better than spending your money on Cyber Monday on junk.
But you Giving Tuesday as in a charity event? I'm not aware of this.
It's like the idea being that like you consumed stuff on Amazon or Target or all these other places on Tuesday. This is an opportunity for these charitable organizations
Wednesday?
I don't think there's anything for Wednesday.
Okay.
This is like a Red Friday conversation again. Red Wednesday, Red Tuesday. I don't want to get into that. All I'm telling you is that it's Giving Tuesday and they gave us our time back, which we appreciate.
I was not aware. I was not aware of that. That's a good thing.
So that's all. It is a good thing. It's good to give. It's good to give back. You ever do any charitable work?
In the past, I have. Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't know if you were actively involved. Well, actually, you were. Weren't you doing some stuff with the J or?
I'm. I don't know if it's necessarily falls in the charity category, but yeah, I'm on a associate board for.
So they raise money for charitable funds
for a local organization. Yeah.
That sounded way more professional, the way you put it, versus the way this conversation started. So,
First text in today, by the way. First text, it just says, play Cody guys to fill time. I have no idea what that is.
They have a drop.
The morning show has a drop of you. We have drops of everybody.
Oh, okay.
And like I guess there's one that they played today. Guys.
What was I talking
Dusty,
about?
I think, was trying to find it for us. I have no idea. Here it is.
Guys, if you start, I'm telling you, guys, it's so sharp.
Why is it so loud?
I don't know.
Guys,
maximum
guys.
Volume. That's fine.
I think that's their point. I think that was the point of the drop.
Talk the way I talk, you know, is what it is. Let's move on to the Chiefs, at least on this end, because you and I were honestly in between breaks yesterday having a conversation.
Yes.
About Joshua Simmons, because typically when the Chiefs have a first round pick at the end of that season, we evaluate how that first round pick is going. And depending on the year, right? Trip McDuffie, we might've said, all right, that's going great. Or George Karloftis. Wow. That's a good first round pick. These things are going great. And then with Felix Anudika Uzama, it felt like we knew that that was going south, at least here in the early end. Not to say that it still couldn't have worked out after his rookie season, or Xavier Worthy, and he helped them on the way to being in a Super Bowl, even if they didn't win it. So we usually have some sort of sense. I am genuinely having a hard time describing how I would say the Chiefs' first-round pick, Josh Simmons' season went, because when on the field at multiple times this year, he looked like an all-pro.
Yeah, he's been great.
Then he was just gone for unknown reasons, and now he's hurt. So how am I to evaluate it? Am I supposed to be fine at left tackle for the future? Don't think I can say that. I don't think I can say with any kind of confidence. I have optimism that I feel like I'm going to end up putting him in the category of Xavier Worthy. Optimism that he could work out as a very good long-term player, maybe even an all-pro. But I have no real firm answers on any of that right now because I can't be sure the other stuff is not something that's recurring because I don't know what it is. And assuming that if you're already getting dinged up and he was coming into college hurt, now he came into the league hurt. He's now hurt again. And while it seems like a freak injury, I have to be worried about that too. Don't you?
Right. It's complicated. I think I have no questions about his performance on the field. I think with his play, we have seen he is as advertised on what he could be as a left tackle in this league. Well, it's more the availability question. And I do think this dislocated / fractured wrist that he has, you fully recover from that and he's fine. This is not another knee injury or something. We'd be having a completely different conversation if this was now the other knee or he had, re-tore something, a ligament in his knee. That would be far more concerning. A wrist injury, while it's devastating for the moment and he's probably not playing the rest of the year, it sure feels like. That's not something that you don't recover from and still play at a high level. But you're right. He plays 8 games this year. If he doesn't play another game, it'll be 8 games played. And going back to draft night for different reasons, it's weird. If I would have told you on draft night, Josh Simmons is going to play 8 games, you would have actually been like, oh, okay, so he's going to miss the beginning, but then maybe the play of Jalen Moore or somebody's not good, and then he'll be ready to go, and then they'll just start him the rest of the way. Yeah. That's probably what you would have thought. This go around, of course, he recovered from the patellar tendon injury way quicker, was ready for camp, played really, really well when he's been on the field, had the absence, and then now this injury. And so it is very complicated, I think, to describe his rookie season. But I'm not worried about the play on the field. And I'm not worried really about this wrist injury. It's still this unknown of whatever else the other thing was. So if you're asking me, do I think that they still have a question mark fully at left tackle? No, I'm not there. I don't think it's a question mark. I think they need to go draft a tackle in the first or second round. No, I'm not there. Now, maybe you argue on the right side of the line. You're not convinced that Jalen Moore for a year or whatever is going to be fine if they move on from Juwan Taylor. That's a whole different conversation. But do I think they need to address left tackle in the offseason? No.
I think that it's not. Do I think they will? No, I think they'll wait another year. Do I think that we have left tackle all shored up, figured out for the next 10 years the way I thought after a month into the season? No, absolutely not. You can't say that with any kind of assurance. And because the way the season has gone, it just adds more questions. And that the reason why it's a problem, Gold, is you know what they're doing at center and you know what they're doing at right guard. They already paid those guys. Maybe you got a 2-3 year answer at left guard with Kingsley. Seems like if he was their left guard through the rest of their rookie contract, I wouldn't exactly be complaining to be fine based on the way the play's gone this year.
Yeah.
No answers at right tackle and question marks again at left. So they still go into a season next year where you're like, all right. And they know better than we do, right? They know why Josh Simmons missed time.
Sure.
They know whether or not that's going to be a thing that could reoccur or could show back up or could cause him to miss games. But I don't want to just brush the injury one away. I understand the freak part of it. And I wait till a third injury to declare a guy injury prone or anything. I'm just saying he came into the league hurt and couldn't make it through this season healthy. And so that does stand out to me, which means next year, if he twists an ankle or hurts an elbow or anything else, I'm be like, well, now we've got 3 straight seasons, his senior year of college, this year and next year, where he's been injured. And I'm gonna have to wonder if he's ever going to stay healthy at left tackle for a full 17 games, which means you have to find a new left tackle, but you got to think about how you're going to pay him, who you're going to always keep on the roster to cover the games he misses and all this other stuff.
I mean, you're not wrong. It's been weird. I think you're pointing out a lot of the worst case outcome scenarios.
Oh, for the injury stuff.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's just one injury. Other things happened, but yes.
But it definitely is a bizarre rookie season. I mean, that's fair. I mean, it's just weird. As I said, going back to the draft, if I would have told you he was going to play 8 games, you would have thought it was because he wasn't available for the first 2 months due to the recovery of the knee. And then he played later on in the year and took someone else's job. Whereas on this hand, he was already ready to go and it was a new injury and then the month-long absence. If he didn't have the absence, would you still have the same concern that if it was just now the fractured wrist, but he had already played now 12 games, he played in the first 12, let's say, in this hypothetical, and now had the
And now I'd still have questions in the offseason about the injury stuff, but it wouldn't seem as significant. It's maybe because the illness is getting lumped into that because he missed half a season. Or not illness. Whatever he missed the time.
They listed it as illness at one point, so
sure.
Whatever.
Yeah, so whatever he missed the time for. And again, that is more controllable, obviously.
And that's what I'm saying is
the physical health of somebody's
body. And that's my point. In my mind, if we think that is an isolated issue, then he played...
We don't know.
He played, you know, 12 games, basically, in his rookie season. And it's a wrist injury, not an ankle injury, as you described, not a knee injury,
sure,
not a hamstring injury. We're talking about an upper body injury, and it's not even a shoulder or something or that you'd be more concerned about. We're talking about a wrist. I mean, fractured wrist. He will come back and be the same football player in terms of that injury. I obviously cannot promise that he'll never get hurt again. I can't promise whatever the off the field thing was, but this wrist injury, I don't think changes anything for his career.
Look, in the long term, no, but I think you and I both agree on, you and I have, I think, generally agreed on what ends up being categorized as injury prone. And if you were hurt in three straight seasons, you're injury prone one way or the other. And like you and I have talked about, like, the freak versus non-freak or the other stuff. Some people are just a magnet for it. And I start thinking you're a magnet for it if you're hurt 3 years in a row. And so I just think there are more questions there than I was hoping to have. Honestly, largely it's just, describing his season is almost impossible because highest of highs as far as ability on the field, it appears, for a rookie at left tackle. He grades out is one of the best isolation left tackles in the NFL this year. Like with the other elite level left tackles when put on an island. He's as good as anybody. He really is. And then the unknown and then the injury, you're just like, what a weird year. Because I'm certainly not here telling you going into next year like, boy, I'd undo that pick. Because here's the truth, I wouldn't. Left tackle is too important. I wouldn't unwind that and choose some other player if even knowing what I know with Simmons. And so I still like the pick. I still think the pick has a high potential of working out. There's just like way more questions of it going into year two. Had he just played 12 games and got his wrist injured, I'd be like, boy, they got their left tackle. You know, like you'd almost just feel like, it might be the off the field stuff that was more concerning because you and I both don't know whether or not
The only question I would have. I mean, the knee is clearly healthy.
Unless he gets hurt again.
The knee is clearly healthy and he will make a full recovery from this wrist injury. So the only question mark I would have about him moving forward would be this unknown. That's it. I'm not worried. Like, as much as it sucks that he's not on the field possibly the remainder of the season with the fractured wrist and what that does to this O-line as they get set to take on the number one defense in football in the Houston Texans. I'm not worried about the long-term outlook injury-wise, I guess is what I would say. So we can get back into this. Well, that's Nate Taylor. He's going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour today, our Chiefs insider from ESPN. Text line wide open as always, 913-586-7965. That's the Jays Southland Tow Service text line. We'll be keeping an eye on that as we do throughout the show. Here in about 20 minutes, our VNFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino, is out of the country. So we've got our NFL insider.
There's no
other way for me to describe Michael Massey's name and tie it in. So Michael Massey, who's got to be feeling good, though, about a Chicago Bears. Of course, he's going to join us. Good to have the Royals second baseman join us on the show in just a little bit.
I believe he spends his offseason in Chicago. Well, so he's been just living in the city, buzzing with Bears fandom. So I told him he'll be prepared for his top five, bottom five. He'll cover Vinny's needs there as well. So yeah, it'll be good to talk to Michael Massey for the first time. Plus, I'm just curious how his offseason's going, you know? Always curious for players.
Yeah, it's been
like
a while since we chatted with Michael Massey. Looking forward to that. All right, let's stick with the Chiefs, though, a little bit. One thing that Andy Reid discussed yesterday was, one, as a coach, how you handle calls you disagree with, but also just this team, where the penalties are at. And neither were you, Cody, here last Friday after the Cowboys game, but I could tell through social media during the game, understandably so, there was a lot of the blame game going on with officiating. And I will once again say the same thing that we've said in the past when people have used it against the Chiefs.
Yes.
The Chiefs did not lose the game because of officiating or anything like that. That's very clear, I think. What are the questionable calls? Yeah. What it continues to bring up is that in the NFL, more than ever, seemingly, and some of it is because of the replays and all this, officiating is an all-time low in the National Football League. It just is. Whether it's for Kansas City, against Kansas City, for
it's
Buffalo, against Buffalo, it's just not good. It is not good at all, and I'm not saying they don't have a difficult job as officials, but there is still the unknown sometimes with the catch There's still the unknown with what is, you know, roughing the passer or not. There is still, you know, the questions in game of what's reviewable or not, even from officials on the field where they screw up. And then there was an issue, I think it was last night's game or maybe it was Sunday Night Football.
The coin toss in overtime?
Well, no, there's a penalty that was assessed on, they said, oh, the penalty will be assessed on the kickoff. And then the rules analyst came on. He's like, yeah, that's not, that rule had to only be assessed on the extra point. Like they allowed the Buffalo Bills, I think it was, or somebody to apply the penalty on the kickoff when it should have been on the extra point. Like little mistakes like that, that the guys on the field should just know.
In overtime this week, there was a game in which they allowed the team to both choose whether to kick and receive and which direction they wanted to go. They gave them both choices. You know what?
I can't remember what game that was.
Yeah. Have both. Why not? You know? And I think that that's maybe what it is. Look, I don't think Andy's wrong. Specifically, that game last week was hideous. I mean, genuinely, hideously reffed. Was it the reason the Chiefs lost the game? No, they shot themselves in the foot a bunch, like they've done a bunch of times this season. You and I have will not blame refs for individual losses. But I will say that I think that the calls have now worked. I think that the noise was loud enough in the early part of the season that the Chiefs are still being called in a 55-45 split against. As in, some of the ticky-tack things are working against them. But largely, I'm with you. I think it's just a league-wide problem of this is not a particularly well-reffed league, and they constantly blow calls. And because of that, you notice it all the time.
In the last week or two, I think in particular, they've kind of created the narrative and their own controversy with how they're calling defensive pass interference too in the league. Like this goes back, I don't know how many years it's been at this point, guys, with the Saints and the whole defensive pass interference. Remember they tried to make it reviewable and then it was a disaster because nobody was going to ever overturn the officials on the field for a DPI. And I am someone that has advocated for not having this. I do not want penalties to be reviewable.
I want less replay.
I as much as it gets frustrating to watch, I do not want us to be reviewing pass interference or anything like that, or reviewing roughing the passer even. But at the same time, I think they've created a bit of a controversy because as much as we don't know what a catch is, I think there's plenty of times now where even on the field, game to game, what they call DPI or holding or illegal contact just changes on a game-by-game basis.
And the last game, if Trent McDuffie so much as breathed on CeeDee Lamb, it was defensive pass interference in their mind. Not the normal, we're fighting for the ball, the ball's in the air. Because there were two on McDuffie that I'm like, I don't think that one's pass interference. Like, certainly ones that were, and I'm not here to argue, but there were at least two, specifically that one on that third down that was like over CeeDee Lamb's head. That just looked like he was in tight coverage with CeeDee Lamb, and then they both turned around. I didn't see anything weird about it. But again, I'm not saying that it's the reason they lost the game. But I don't think Andy's wrong necessarily in the, I don't know how I'm supposed to do this anymore. We get penalized all the time. I will point out, as we did a couple of weeks ago, because somebody on the text line yesterday said the same thing, which is they got to fix the penalties. That's the thing they really got to fix. This has been a heavily penalized team the entire time under Andy Reid. We pulled the numbers.
Yeah, they've won Super Bowls being the most penalized teams.
It doesn't matter. That is not the reason they're losing, because they're being called for more penalties. It is the same thing going back to the offense as last year. They need 8 to 10 plays to go down and score a touchdown. And if you need 8 plays to score a touchdown, guess how many times you have given yourself a chance to screw up, to get called for an illegal formation, to get called for a hold, to get called for an illegal screen or anything else in between, and thus making it way harder to score. Their problem is that they still don't score easy. They have a functional offense. It moves the ball. But Tyquan Thornton not being a part of the deep game lately and all this other stuff, that's hurting them. The fact that they have to wait so long to go down and get in the end zone is what makes these penalties more prevalent.
Yeah, that was kind of the formula, as you said, more 2 years ago, I would argue, than even last year for opponents, you know, that make the Chiefs have long sustained drives. Eventually they can't get out of their own way. They're either going to turn the ball over or they're going to commit their own penalty, a holding call, a crucial legal formation. And that was the things against the Cowboys. I think that was probably the most frustrating for fans. Not just that maybe you disagree with the call, is that whenever the Chiefs made those mistakes and there was a call, Kansas City, you know, was in a spot where it was a defensive third and long. They were on the field. The text line's a mixed bag on the penalty reviewable stuff. Some Lobby Burger agreeing that you shouldn't. Someone just texted in and said penalty should 100% reviewable. I understand the intrigue on, you know, on the surface of saying like, oh yeah, if the coach disagrees with a defensive pass interference or roughing the passer, he should be able to throw a flag. I don't think we want to get down the road of penalties being reviewable. Now, maybe your argument is you could review one penalty a game, we can have a conversation, I guess, at that point. I sure as heck do not want us to be in a spot where upstairs is constantly reviewing penalties. If you want to tell me that as one of your challenges, it counts as a penalty challenge or as a you know, just a normal play challenge, and it goes for both, and if you want to waste your challenge on a 15-yard face mask call, but maybe it's at a crucial point of the game.
Yeah, maybe it's the Juwan Taylor one on the goal line.
Then maybe in that moment, I would agree. But again, I don't think you're going to like the result of that, not only the time, and that even that Juwan Taylor face mask you're referencing, by rule, technically, they can call that a face mask. Uh-huh. So they're not going to overturn that. Like, I think a lot of times as fans, we watch a penalty and we're like, oh, that was a soft call. Well, then it's not going to get overturned because it was still the right call, even if we think it was soft.
Because
the
only way they're subject.
The only way they're going to overturn a penalty, if we allowed it, would be if it was clearly just a whiff. But if it was like, oh, I could kind of see it, well, then they're going to keep the call in the field. Like,
I'm not really sure, because the Simmons one was the most egregious one of the last game, where it's like, he didn't hold him, he just kicked his ass.
Yeah.
And it's like, but because hands are on the body, how are they going to overturn it?
Yeah.
They can't prove that he didn't have a fingertip in a jersey? Like, get out of here. It's not, they're just, and we've already, I want less, genuinely, all around, less review, not more. Certainly not penalties. I would like it, somehow, to be more consistent, but maybe it's just because the number of players, maybe it's because the game moves too fast. That's where, like, I've been okay with, like, the Sky Cam review, where they're just, like, quickly saying, nah, that wasn't really what it was, and moving on. I'm okay with that, Gold. Like, if it's quick and nobody has to say anything and we all just move on with our lives, then fine. But I do think Andy's on to a little bit of something with the, I think it's been called a little heavy on the Chiefs the last month and a half. And it's largely because of the large-scale conversation that took place early in the year.
Coming up in 12 minutes, we'll talk with Michael Massey from the Royals. Well, we're going to be talking mainly NFL with him. He's filling in for our VNFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino. That's coming up in just a bit. Tonight, big-time college basketball game in Lawrence at Allen Fieldhouse. The Jayhawks welcoming in the UConn Huskies. The Hawks are rare home dogs. They're 1.5-point underdogs. But the big question with this game, not only is it a top-tier matchup, Cody, two top 25 teams, is Darren Peterson going to play? This was Bill Self yesterday on his playing availability for tonight.
He has practiced, and he's gone up and down. The hesitancy I have is that before we'll announce anything, is he has to test out medically from a strength and flexibility standpoint, and we'll know that in the morning. Still no answer, but we'll be able to say something definitively in the morning.
If he's able to play, like, is there any thought in your mind of starting, not starting? Does that matter to you?
Doesn't matter, but if he plays, he's starting.
So that was Bill Self yesterday referencing the morning. That would be like now. So
yep.
at any time we could find out if he's playing. Look, if you're just a college basketball fan, tonight's game against UConn is a hell of a lot better if Darren Peterson is playing. Now for Kansas, selfishly, of course, their chances of winning this game with Darren Peterson go up dramatically if he plays. They had a great showing in Vegas. This is a big step up in competition, though, going up against UConn. And they, remember, have not won, other than Tennessee, any of these top 25 matchups. They lost to Duke. They lost to North Carolina. They did beat Tennessee. They get UConn at the Fieldhouse tonight. I hope he plays. I mean, that sounded more optimistic, but, you know, we've kind of been through this thing before with injuries. And it seems like he's close. Is he not close? It seems like he's closer than ever than playing. Do you think he plays tonight?
I think he does. I think largely they kept him out of Vegas for the same reason. They played 3 straight days. And they knew that was never going to work. And so now they've got kind of a normal time. And you know this, they usually get that like week off around Christmas-y time where like they don't play basketball for a few days. So you get a little bit of extra rest during that time as well. So my guess is that he plays tonight. I think what interests me most about them, and then we can talk about K-State and Missouri and the other locals too if we want, but the thing that interests me most about them is the way they played in Vegas makes me think that if Darren Peterson came back, they could be back to looking like Kansas. Like a top 10 basketball team. Not a team as an underdog at Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
Kansas,
by the way, they could still be dogs. Like right now, it's 1.5. If they announce right this second that Darren Peterson's playing, it still might be a pick 'em. I don't think Kansas suddenly becomes a 3 or 4 point favorite.
Sure. But because of the way they played without him, I'm just saying like the talent on the roster might be better than I thought in the early part of the season, where it looked like they were going to be back to where they were, a 3 or 4 seeded team in the NCAA tournament, which isn't Kansas, based on what I've watched a huge chunk of my life under Bill Self, where they have been a 1 or 2 seed pretty much every year. he's been their head coach. It feels like I'm more optimistic on them now than even I was probably at the beginning of the season, because I saw them without Darren Peterson figure some things out. And I think we all know that he's still one of the best players in the country.
Well, for them to get to where they want to get, whether, you know, winning a Big 12, being a top three seed in the tournament, all that, Darren Peterson has to be part of the equation. This goes back to, I think, conversations when you were gone, Drew and I were having, like, for people that were worried about, you know, the workload he was getting, or was, you know, was he really hurt and all this craziness a couple weeks ago. Ultimately, you have to get him to 100%, because none of this really matters if you think he's not going to be available in conference play anyway.
Well, that's where I was going to ask you guys. Would you rather him back for the UConn game just to see where you're at against a team like UConn, who's top five, I believe, in the country at 85%, or rather him be 100%, get the chemistry ready, and feel over the next couple weeks so that by the time you get to Big 12 play, which actually, I mean, it's right around the corner, essentially, you have a good feel for how they play together, and you're not still trying to figure things out while you're playing the Houstons and the BYUs and the others that are in the conference that are.
No, he has to be 100% if I'm playing him.
So you'd rather, if he's 85 or 90, you'd rather wait.
Yeah, to me, he needs to be 100% or almost right at 100%, because, as I said, bigger picture here, not only for him individually in his own career, but for Kansas to do anything of note, as we were always talking about March, Darren Peterson has to be fully available. And so if that means another game, as much as that would suck, then so be it. Yeah. But yeah, of course I wanted to play tonight. This is a big time matchup. It's, you know, you want to see him and this team against really, really good competition. And UConn certainly is that.
It certainly wouldn't, like, I mean, it's not like you won't get other chances to figure out what kind of team they are with Darren Peterson. Like you mentioned, Houston's 8 in the country, BYU 9 in the country.
The conference is loaded.
Iowa State 10th in the country. You know, it's like, I don't have to.
You'll have other ways to test yourself against the best teams in the country.
It's 100%. A big week for them, just from a fan perspective too, because you get UConn at home, and then KU and MU at T-Mobile this Sunday. This Sunday.
What's the get-in price for that?
I haven't checked updated. Rob and I have been talking about that for a while. I actually do not know the updated get-in price for Sunday at T-Mobile.
It's a busy day for KU and MU fans. You got that game, and then you get the Chiefs game, of course.
Yeah, it works out, though, that they're playing Sunday Night Football. I still don't like that the game, ooh, the basketball game, dip? Sunday. Oh, I'm sure people will. I don't like that I hate that they're playing on Sunday morning. I just do, but.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't feel like a natural basketball.
Is that one of those games that we would use to see on like CBS at like 11 a.m. Or you know, the one of those college basketball games?
Yeah, I don't know what network this game's on. I'm assuming not tonight. I'm talking about Sunday. I'm guessing it's on ESPN Sunday. I don't know.
I can't pretend to understand the complexities of scheduling as it relates to college basketball. I'll just tell you right now, if I had any say at all, I would never be up against the NFL.
Yeah, it's on ESPN Sunday
morning. I would
not
schedule a college basketball game near or anywhere near an NFL game. I want people to watch my sport.
Yeah, it's so tonight, obviously, against UConn is at 8 o'clock on ESPN, and then Sunday it's at noon on ESPN2. Did you
really
see what happened?
They're putting on 2?
Yeah, on Sunday, yeah.
You can't even get it on regular ESPN?
Yeah. Last night, did you guys see what happened in Manhattan as well? Kansas State's lost 3 in a row. They lost a bye game to Bowling Green.
They can't play defense.
I mean, they started 5-0, and they were
scoring. If the game's ugly, they will lose the game. Or if I don't think they can play a game ugly.
You think they got to win in like a shootout?
Yeah, so it's the way that they are. If it's a shootout, K-State might actually be favored in that one. But if it's a game where it's like you got to score, like the winner is at 65 points. If it's a game where you're playing a good defense and K-State's struggling, like against Bowling Green, they lost.
It's Bowling Green.
It wasn't like it was like a 2-point loss.
Yeah, it was not 88-86. Yeah, this was a wide margin. And Bowling Green, I haven't looked up what their expectations are in their conference, but my guess is Bowling Green not supposed to necessarily be some power in their own conference.
They're 6-2, but they also beat Kansas State by, like, they didn't just beat them.
That's what you're saying.
They worked them over. I just thought the way Haggerty was going early and they were 5-0, I'm like, oh, you know what? Maybe Kansas State is a tournament team.
It's early, but definitely not a good sign. They've lost a couple in a row. By the way, Missouri tonight, Missouri taking on Notre Dame. So a common opponent. KU already played Notre Dame. Missouri plays Notre Dame tonight, and then the two play each other on Sunday. All right, coming up next, Michael Massey going to join us. He's filling in for our NFL Insider. We'll ask him about the Chicago Bears, who are the number one seed in the NFC right now, the rest of the NFL, and how is offseason going.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Come on. Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
That's coming up.
He's a husband, a dog dad, a first baseman, and a fantasy football commissioner.
Being a commissioner for the league is tough, and I'm really excited. I'm wearing a suit today.
He also likes to fill the bathtub with hard work and Jets tears.
I can't take any more disappointment. That's what he used to say when we watched the Jets games together.
But his most important job is being a Vin FL insider.
I haven't enjoyed a football season since 1969.
On 96.5 The Fan, here's Vinny Pasquantino.
Well, normally this would be our time of the week where we check in with Vinny Pasquantino, but it's the off season. He's out of the country. We'll hope to have him back next week. And a few times when Vinny's been gone, we've been fortunate enough to be able to call up our friend Michael Massey from the Royals as well. And Michael joins us right here as our fill-in insider today. Michael, what's going on, man? It's been a while since we had you on the show. And normally when we've talked football with you, it's been, well, have they figured out the quarterback? Have they figured out the coach? What's the draft plans? This must be an unbelievable feeling for you atop the NFC.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. That's a heck of an intro right there for Vinny.
His Jets are still lost. You've got way ahead of him on there.
Yeah, we're feeling good in Chicago. There's a good vibe in the city. Ben Johnson's ripping his shirt off in the locker room. The Wiener Circle's giving out free hot dogs every Monday. So things are good in Chicago.
The guys on the show did not believe me the other day when I said, yeah, there's a hot dog place called the Wiener Circle. And I was trying to explain that whole thing to them.
It is. It's one of those places where they're like super mean to you. I mean, that I guess isn't any different of a lot of places in Chicago. But when you walk in, they're like super mean to you and they insult you. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to Dick's Last Resort. But
yeah,
kind of the same idea.
What is what's your go-to on a Chicago dog? By the way, are you a traditionalist?
You're going to get me in trouble. Nope. You're going to get me in trouble.
Are you going to say ketchup? Are you about to say ketchup?
Oh, don't make me say it.
I like ketchup on a hot dog.
So do I. I get made fun of as well. I mean, I'm not from Chicago, but I honestly just want the ketchup on the hot dog. I'm glad to hear, even though you won't say it, that you like ketchup on your hot dog.
I'm a ketchup. I like some hot peppers, a little celery salt, some onions. It's an interesting mix.
Before we get to the full NFL slate, I'm just curious, how's your off season going so far? We haven't talked to you since the end of the Royals season.
Yeah, it's been great. Being back in Chicago, being able to spend time with some family, and get some time off, be able to heal the body, and kind of start getting back after it has been really nice. So enjoying it, but also kind of starting to get that itch to get going again.
I gotta say, you seem like the kind of guy who spends a lot of the off season being like, okay, I can do something different. You're an evaluator, is how I would put it. Where I think you think about your game a lot. Is that how you spend a big chunk of your off season?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, I'm a big believer in success leaves clues. And you know, I think everybody in the major leagues has the talent to stay there. And I think everyone there has the talent to be good there. It's just a matter of can you find those certain things that make you a consistent player, and then can you execute them on a daily basis? So, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that I need to make some changes based on last year. And, you know, a lot of that starts with just figuring out ways to stay healthy. And then as well as looking at some different things in my swing and, you know, trying to get that back path in the zone a little bit longer to be more consistent. So, yeah, to your point, been doing a lot of studying, but having some conversations with, you know, current players, former players, and trying to make some adjustments to make some improvements for next year.
Michael Massey joining us here on 96.5 The Fan. You might have answered it a little bit there, but what's that balance of, as you said, you see where the performance was, you recognize there's some tweaks you need to make, but also like not overcorrecting too much and maybe, you know, overcomplicating it as well. How do you balance that? The input you get, but also trying to still make sure you don't maybe go overboard on one way as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just logic, right? I think it's just what makes sense. You know, I think the, you know, looking at my swing from this past year, like my zone, my bat path was not in the zone for a very long time at all. And, you know, when you're not in the zone for a long time against major league pitching, you know, those guys are really good at getting you to be off time. And when that timing window is small to begin with, you're going to be pretty inconsistent. So I think just looking at it and being like, look, man, there's a lot of guys that are having success. Let me take a look at what those guys are doing. Let me look at their swing. Let me look at my swing. Okay, they don't look like they're the same right now. How do we get it to look similar? And again, I think if you could get caught going down some rabbit holes for sure. But I think when you test it against logic and you say, well, crap, if I can get my bat in the zone for a longer period of time, I don't think that's something that's going to make me a worse hitter. So just kind of doing a lot of that stuff. And like I said, talking to former players and coaches and guys I trust, and, you know, obviously they've been through it before. So, I'm excited. I'm having as much fun as I've ever had, you know, being able to study it and get better.
The last time I was in Chicago, I went to a bar where you could like hit in the batting cage. You ever been there?
Oh, in Wrigleyville, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been to Sluggers.
That's the name of it.
That place is great.
I just feel like it'd be a little unfair for you there. People are like, what the hell's going on with this guy? He's hitting a little different than the rest of us.
Oh, you got to have a few drinks first. That's the only rule.
Loosen up. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL and your Chicago Bears. How surprised are you, or I guess how real do you think they are, that they are currently the number one seed? Do you think this is like sustainable? Because people obviously always doubt the teams that find themselves at the top that haven't been there in a while.
Yeah, no, I think certainly surprised. I mean, based on, you know, where they've been in over the last couple of years and really the last decade or so. Obviously, the hiring of Ben Johnson was exciting, and the success that he had in Detroit. And, you know, you got a first overall pick in Caleb Williams playing quarterback, who I think there's high hopes for. And, you know, the whether they're for real or not, I'm still not sure, right? You guys forced me to dig into some stats here.
Yeah.
I mean, you go look at the defense, and when it comes to yards given up, they're 27th in the league. So obviously that's a concern. But the other stat I heard the other day that I think is really interesting is the Chicago Bears moved the line of scrimmage downfield more than any NFL team, which I think is a really, really interesting stat. And I think a lot of it goes to, I think their run game, they're averaging like 180 yards over the past 6 weeks on the ground. Which obviously is helping Caleb Williams as a younger quarterback. But I think a lot of that goes to Ben Johnson and just the way that he schemes things up. I mean, if you watch the Bears, the amount of motions that they have, the guys moving and different guards pulling, and to me, they can make the same play look like three different plays. You know, one time you got DJ Moore coming in motion and they turn around and hand it off and he goes around the end. The next time, you got Cole Kmet going in motion, looking like he's gonna block the, you know, defensive end, and they're doing a quarterback sneak to the left, and it's like the same look, but they're running five different plays off of it. And I just think defensive lines are having a hard time anticipating what play it is, and the offensive line is getting that extra split second to get off the ball. And like I said, move that line of scrimmage downfield, which I think people were able to see in the national TV game against the Eagles.
Who are you, I guess, enjoying on the team to, you know, on your actual team, not the Bears, to text that the Bears are having this kind of success, because I'm sure you got a bunch of crap in the group text for years about your Chicago Bears, and now for once you can fire back and they can't really say anything.
Yeah, you know what? It's been quiet. I've we've been humbled for a long enough time to know that you know, you never know what's around the bend. So I'm optimistic, but not quite talking crap yet.
Okay. Now, do you think the division's complicated? I know it's tight there. The schedule's still a little tough for the Bears. Do you think they ultimately win the division? And if it's a home playoff game, are you there?
Oof, those are good questions. I don't think they win the division. I think they get in the playoffs for sure. I don't know that they win the division. I mean, I'm looking at, again, I know the Lions are struggling, but that's still a team that's got a top five quarterback in the league and Jared Goff. They've got Aiden Hutchinson coming off the end as a good pass rusher. They've been there before. I know the, you know, Amon-Ra's deal was a little bit of a sprained ankle, so that hurts them a little bit. I do think the Bears are a little bit better than the Packers, in my opinion. I will see that coming up. I know they got two matchups with them. But again, the Lions, being two games up on the Lions helps, but they do play him still one more time. But it's going to be tight for sure. And to answer the question, I don't know that that's in the price range to go to a home playoff game in Chicago. The tickets here have been – I'm trying to go to the Browns game next weekend, and, like, you can't get in the building for less than probably $400 or $500.
Really? Well, I guess it's been a while, and people are excited. That makes sense.
It's been crazy.
Before we get your top five and bottom five, I do want to ask you about the Chiefs. Do you think they make the playoffs? What have you made of their season so far, obviously, in what has been a very down year for Kansas City?
Yeah, I think the Chiefs make the playoffs. Look, I think it's a quarterback-driven league, and there's nobody better than Mahomes having at the helm there. It's like a starting pitcher in baseball. I mean, that guy can just change the game. And you know, I think the one, again, I haven't been able to watch the Chiefs a ton this year, but the one issue I noticed with them is just the teams converting at a 43% clip on third down against the defense. And I think it's just tough as a team when you can't get off the field on third down. You know, obviously you're extending that current drive for the other team, but then you're talking about field position. If teams are able to go out there and drive after drive, be able to convert a couple third downs, and then they end up not getting it, but they're punting from the 50-yard line, and now you're putting your offense at the, you know, having to go 90 yards to be able to score. I think it's just tough to play complementary football. And you look at, I did some digging, you look at the top eight teams and their ability to get off the field on third down. It's Denver, Houston, Seattle, the Chargers, the Patriots, surprisingly, Vinny's Jets. And
they make no sense to me. I was like, the rest of the teams make a lot of sense together.
Yeah, but you've got seven of the eight teams that I just mentioned are playoff teams. You know, and only two of those five teams are top five defenses in the league. And so I wouldn't necessarily say you need like the old school steel curtain on defense or the 85 Bears defense anymore, but I do think there is a correlation with being able to get off the field on third down. So I think if they clean that up, you've got the best quarterback in football, one of the best coaches in football. They've been there before. And to be honest with you, if you're the Broncos, you can't feel good about having a home playoff game and seeing, you know, 15-87 walk out of the tunnel with Andy Reid behind them. I know they may have a better record during the regular season, but that can't be a matchup that you want, you know, in January.
We're talking to our fill-in NFL insider for Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Massey, here on 96.5 The Fan. And Michael, Vinny always gives us the top five, bottom five in the NFL. So let's get your top five teams right now in the NFL.
This is I'm going to go off the cuff a little bit here. This might be a controversial list, but as Stephen A. likes to say, the list is fluid. I picked it more at this point in the season on who I think could win a Super Bowl. More so than maybe where we're at right now. I got the Rams at number one. I think you got, again, it's a quarterback-driven league. You got Stafford. They got a great defense as well. Guy's been there before. It's hard not to put the Patriots at number two after watching them after last night just bully the Giants. I got the Chicago Bears at number three, which maybe a little bias in there.
That's all right. Bias is accepted in your top five, bottom five.
Yeah, and here's where I get a little interesting. My last two teams, and this is going to maybe not go over well in Kansas City, I got the Buffalo Bills, and I got the Detroit Lions at number five. And that's a bit of an interesting pick. I don't have the Broncos in there. I know they're 10-2 or 11-2.
But yeah.
To me, the two things, you look at the last 10 Super Bowl quarterback matchups, and you got Hurts versus Mahomes, Mahomes versus Purdy, Mahomes versus Hurts, Stafford versus Burrow, Brady versus Mahomes, Brady versus Goff. The outlier is Nick Foles versus Tom Brady. You got Brady versus Matt Ryan, and you got Peyton Manning versus MVP season Cam Newton. And to me, there's something telling in that, and it's the fact that you need a quarterback who can play at an MVP level if you want to be in a Super Bowl. And I look at Bo Nix, and I think he's a good player, but the reality is he's 27th in QBR right now in the league. Now, that defense, they pull their weight, but I think if you go back and you look at the last team where I think the defense was consistently better than the offense that won a Super Bowl or even got to a Super Bowl, you probably got to go back to the 2013 Ravens with Joe Flacco. I would say that's probably the last team that I can think of where it's like, man, that defense was even or better and carried them. My Chicago Bears back in 2006 against the Colts with Brian Urlacher, and I think they had Rex Grossman playing quarterback. So I just think with the bottom half of that list, right, I mean, you got the Rams with Stafford, the Patriots with May. The only reason I put the Bears in there is because they are the number one rushing team in the NFL. And I think that, you know, that reminds me a little bit of Philly last year, right? Like, if you're not going to have a great quarterback, you got to do something really, really special. And I think that that helps the Bears. Also, my bias helps them. But I think the Lions and the Bills, right? You got two established quarterbacks, both have playoff experience. They've been there before. No one wants to see Josh Allen in the playoffs. Just like the two teams I have that are not in the playoffs that I think teams wouldn't want to see would be the Chiefs and the Cowboys for the same reason. You don't want that guy. It's like trying to face the Tigers in a one-game playoff, and you got Tarek Skubal. You know, you might be the better team, but in a one-game playoff, you're facing Mahomes or Allen or Goff or Dak Prescott. It's a one-game shootout. So I think the Broncos are a good team. As far as a Super Bowl contender, I'm not quite there on them.
I hear you on Bo Nix. All right, real quick, bottom five in the NFL. Where do you have Vinny's Jets?
Oh, they got him at the third. I got him at 28. Right? For the same reason I just did the top five. I just think teams that don't have a quarterback, these teams don't seem to have a quarterback answer. I got the Browns at last. I got the Saints, Jets, Raiders, and Titans in no particular order. If you don't have the quarterback position figured out in this league, I think you're going to be in trouble.
Michael Massey, great stuff. Talking some NFL. Hope the rest of the offseason goes good, man. And we'll check in maybe on your Bears if they're still rolling in January and February.
Yeah, sounds good, guys. Hopefully the Chiefs are right there with them.
Absolutely. There you go. Michael Massey joining us here on 96.5 The Fan. Always well prepared. Always well prepared.
Oh, he does his research. He takes the job as fill-in NFL insider. Very seriously.
Even when we were talking baseball with him, and we've known this for a couple of years. Not only he loves football, but even just his you heard his response when we were talking about his baseball swing and offseason. Like, he's very, very smart and thought out, and well thought out with his approach to kind of everything. And you heard his answers there on the NFL side of things as well. And for once, the Chicago Bears, man, a little different. Usually we're all like, Chicago Bears, who are they going to draft, Michael? And that's not the conversation right now.
The number one and number two overall picks from last year are the number one seeds in their respective conferences right now. So that's usually what you expect when you start changing those things around.
Well, I'm gonna screenshot this text we just got on the text line just to poke the bear a little bit when Vinny's back next week.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Someone said, Massey's coming for your job, Vinny. I just want to make sure I remember that text for next week to read that to Vinny.
Just to make sure he knows?
Yeah.
Somebody said Massey's coming for his gig?
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like he's going through maybe some swing stuff in the offseason.
Yeah.
So.
Look, as he said, obviously,
don't have a good enough year. Yeah. You try to look for solutions. Sure.
Yeah. No question about that. And there's a couple, we didn't get into a deep conversation there, but they have a couple new faces on the hitting side of things as well. To go along with their current hitting coach, Alex Zumwalt. So all that kind of stuff. And before we know it, spring training in February will be here. That's what's crazy. You think the offseason is long, and it's really not.
No, it moves so quick, and then you just kind of run into a situation where it ends kind of immediately. But I do appreciate Matt. Look, he pointed out the third down stat, and I think it's kind of hard to ignore in the sense that there's a lot of truth to the issues that they have been running into and the consistency on defense and the problems they've been running into.
All right, Drew, let's get to a quick look at college football. We've been talking more college football this week anyway, but the Lane Kiffin stuff. So what else is out there?
Okay, so one of the things that I do want to ask is that the new rankings come out tonight for the CFP. Along the same lines, of course, Lane Kiffin not at Ole Miss, but does Lane Kiffin see his former team now fall at all in terms of where they're at in the rankings?
If they're consistent on this, they should.
See, this is interesting because if you're the committee,
they were seventh last week, by the way.
Yeah, and they won in the Iron Bowl, the Egg Bowl.
Yep.
And based on what happened in front of them, if we think ultimately the committee is going to dock them for not having a head coach that is Lane Kiffin anymore, then I agree with Cody, then go ahead and do it now. But my guess is they will not do it now. They will wait until the final thing, because this is where it gets really shady.
He's gone now.
I agree.
You know, like if you're sticking to the Florida State thing from the committee a couple of years back, you have to ding Ole Miss for not having their head coach. I told you before, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't make that a part of my thought process when I do these things if I formed the committee and it was all up to me. But based on previous actions, they should knock them down a little bit, shouldn't they?
Yes.
You would think so, yes. Yeah. So to where they're not going to host a game anymore. They go on the road real quick, too, before I get to the last thing, because I forgot about this. Duke is in the ACC title game because of the craziness of the tiebreakers. Miami's not in there.
Yeah,
If Duke beats Virginia, there is a chance that two Group of Five teams make the college football playoff, because JMU and Tulane or North Texas could be ranked above Duke, and there might be no ACC team in the college football playoff from an at-large perspective.
Miami, do you think Duke is going to win? Like, look, it's ACC is weird this year. What chances is Duke going to beat Virginia?
They played earlier this year. They played a couple weeks ago, actually.
Yeah,
Virginia won, but, I mean, you've seen an opponent once. You can make adjustments. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think Duke's got a shot, but I would pick Virginia if you made me pick somebody. The last thing I want to talk about, which is funny, I think you guys will appreciate this. The fan reactions to seeing coach hires. Florida fans are not happy in some regard that John Sumrall got hired, because similar along the lines of Billy Napier, a Group of Five coach, all the other things. Other schools in the SEC are like, crap, Florida got John Sumrall. So Florida fans are not happy they got him, but other SEC fans are like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a problem. Florida might get good again. And then Arkansas hires Ryan Silverfield. There are fans protesting with posters in front of him arriving in Fayetteville. They don't want him to hire. They didn't like the hire, and they're protesting the hire.
Well, college football
is nuts, man.
College football, when it comes to hire, that's when fan bases go nuts.
He had to call the police as he was going to the airplane.
Yeah. He said he claims trying to run him off the road, but I also don't know if he's exaggerating. I have no idea. I mean, I saw the reaction at the airport. People were flipping him off and everything like that.
And if he wins, they'll be his best friend. You know how this works.
No. This was in Oxford. LSU fans were very excited.
Oh, Florida. Yeah.
Ole Miss fans found a way to get to where he was taking off from at the airport and were.
I think it's weird because we don't want people getting in this way, but this is also like something we've just kind of blindly accepted about specifically college sports fandom, because they're like 20-year-olds, or for whatever reason they take it like as serious because of the loyal ties. But
it can be older too.
Let the man live his life.
For instance, the Toomer's Corner trees at Auburn. The guy poisoned the trees.
Yes, he did.
He was an Alabama fan. He was like 60.
Yeah, he has since passed away, that guy.
Yes.
But didn't he go to jail for a little bit?
I believe
he has since passed away in the last year or so. When that story, I remember seeing some stuff on that. All right, that's a little look at college football. It has been a crazy last week or so, and it is conference championship Saturday. Should be some good matchups. I'm sure we'll get into those a little bit later on in the week as well. Up next, though, it's always fun when a new month begins to check in on how wrong we were on certain predictions in the NFL season. So we'll take a look at some of the divisional predictions. And thinking of college football, we didn't get to this yesterday, but what does it say about Missouri and Eli Drinkwitz getting this contract extension done, looking ahead a little bit? We'll do that next on Cody and Gold.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.